Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tye.
Well, here we go. Tuesday edition of Wisconsin's Midday News on WTMJ. Greg and Jessica with you till 3 o'clock. So 2 days here. I'm going to be getting my wisdom teeth pulled. People seem to be making fun of me for this. They're like, what are you, 7, 8, 9 years old? I'm like, no, I just haven't had them out. Time to get them out. So Thursday's my day. I don't know what to expect.
Well, I completely understand because I still have 2 of mine, and I'm told that they need to come out. And about 3 years ago, I got my top 2 out. So it does happen. It wasn't, Tim Sheehy?
Tim Sheehy
not
had
that
his
long
own,
ago?
Yeah, like 3 months ago.
He's older than us.
And his recovery was not pleasant, if I remember correctly. So maybe I'll just call in all loopy and see if Gina puts me on the air. We'll give it a shot. 12:10 here on WTMJ. Hey, some big and breaking stories that we're following here this afternoon.
It's now at noon on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Today marks 1 year since a shooting at Abundant Life Christian School in Madison. A teacher and a student were killed that day, 42-year-old Aaron West and 14-year-old Ruby Vergara. 6 others were hurt. The shooting left the Madison community in shock and looking for answers. Today, 1 year later, the healing and recovery process continues. The man who was principal at the time, Doug Butler, says the community is taking time to reflect and remember the victims. He got emotional when describing the support the school received in the aftermath.
We also reflect on the tremendous outpouring of support that we received, not just from our church community, but from Madison and Dane County, around the state, and even across the nation and the world.
After opening fire at the school, the shooter, 15-year-old Natalie Rupnow, shot and killed herself. We want to remind you, Wisconsin has a statewide tip line for K-12 schools that provides staff, students, and community members with a safe and confidential way to report concerns. Speak up, speak out. The number is 1-800-697-8761. Once again, 1-800-697-8761.
The son of director Rob Reiner remains in custody in Los Angeles for allegedly killing his father Rob and mother Michelle Reiner. The case going in front of a district attorney today in Los Angeles. ABC's Alex Stone is monitoring.
Today, LAPD investigators say they will be presenting their case, the evidence, and what they have learned to the LA County DA so the DA can decide on what charges to file against Nick Reiner. He was booked into jail by police on suspicion of murder, but it's a district attorney who decides on what charges to file and actually filing those charges. That will come today, and then once charges are filed, then we'll know when Nick Reiner will make his initial appearance in court for allegedly killing his mom and dad.
Multiple outlets reporting that Rob and Nick got into an argument at Conan O'Brien's holiday party on Saturday. Nick was seen there and acting strangely. Sunday, law enforcement sources say the couple's daughter found them with fatal stab wounds inside their Brentwood home. Nick Reiner had been open about battling drug addiction since he was a teenager.
It is day 2 of testimony in the federal trial in Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan. Judge Dugan is accused of helping a man who was in the country illegally evade immigration agents at the Milwaukee County Courthouse in April. She faces charges of obstruction and concealing an individual to prevent arrest. Taking the witness stand so far today, members of the arrest team. That includes 2 FBI agents, a supervisor with U.S. Customs and Border Protection, and an ICE agent. 2 observations so far today. More than one person on the arrest team has testified that Judge Dugan seemed upset when learning of the arrest plans. One FBI agent said Dugan seemed angry. A supervisor with Customs and Border Protection said she was, quote, visibly upset. Another theme that I took note of, it's come up numerous times today, is that it was not routine for the agents to talk to the chief judge. Upon learning of the arrest plan, Judge Dugan told the agents they needed to go see the chief judge. One agent testified today that all of that led to confusion. Another noted that caused them to deviate from their plan. The jury is just now heading into a lunch break. Stay with us. Coming up at 12:35, we're going to bring you perspective from inside the courtroom WISN-TV political director Matt Smith will join us live from the courthouse.
Yeah, very unique perspective from Matt. He'll bring it to us coming up in about 25 minutes. It's approaching 12:14 here on WTMJ, 32 degrees and sunny in downtown Milwaukee. Now at Noon is sponsored by Flanners Home Entertainment. Sound advice at the best price. Check them out online at flanners.com and just press play. An incredibly sad story here that we learned about a little less than a week ago, and it's now been confirmed, the cause of death for 19-year-old Claire Tracy. Claire Tracy grew up in Menomonee Falls. She attended Brookfield Academy, standout soccer player growing up, and a member of the women's soccer team at Rice University, which is in Houston. Claire died the evening of December 7th, and her official cause of death is asphyxiation due to oxygen displacement by helium. Claire took her own life. She left behind a series of TikTok posts hinting at her struggles with mental health. And prior to her death, Tracy also participated in something called the Devil Trend. And if you've been on TikTok, if you're active on TikTok, you've maybe seen this pass through your algorithm. You could do a simple Google search and find out what it is. The Devil Trend on TikTok is a viral challenge. And it's potentially very dangerous, where users prompt an AI chatbot, such as ChatGPT, to provide a brutally honest assessment of their perceived flaws and insecurities. So someone may go to ChatGPT and say that they're playing this devil trend on TikTok, and they ask for a brutally honest assessment highlighting their insecurities and flaws. Well, Claire did this the day before she died. Mental health experts believe this is an extremely dangerous activity, especially when done in isolation and with somebody who has struggled with mental health in any way, shape, or form. So Tracy's post included a response from a chatbot that read, in part, "You burned yourself out chasing meaning, dissecting your own existence until the analysis became its own form of violence." That's from the chatbot. That's from a ChatGPT-like source that Claire was communicating with. The trend has emerged while OpenAI, they are the makers of ChatGPT, are being sued amidst evidence that chatbots encourage suicidal thoughts and even coach users on how to harm themselves. Now, previous posts on TikTok indicate that Claire had some mental health struggles that she was battling through. But this was the final post that she had before her death, taking her own life at the age of 19. Brookfield Academy high school graduate. She attended Brookfield Academy starting in seventh grade. Prized student, outstanding athlete, went to play soccer at the Division I level, but struggled with her own insecurities and mental health.
This is just one of those stories. As soon as I heard about it, I just thought, oh, your heart just breaks for her family, for her friends, for the community. And it just is a reminder that you never know what is happening in somebody's life. This story in particular reminded me of, this is decades ago now, but I remember went to Brookfield East High School, and I was a freshman at the time, and I believe she was a senior, a young woman who was so smart. It reminds me of Claire because she was a standout soccer player, and she died, and we found out she took her own life. And you have students at that age who are just thinking, wow, this young woman had everything going for her, right? She was smart. She was beautiful. She was an awesome soccer player, and she took her own life. I mean, it just shows you that you never know. Be kind. And it's also striking to me that we've talked about the dangers of AI, right? You can use AI and it can be a very helpful tool, but it can also be dangerous. But it struck me that we're not talking about a 12-year-old using AI or a 15-year-old. This was a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
Using AI and jumping onto this trend.
Well, and you wonder when those mental health struggles started, right? I mean, are you born with that? Does it happen when you get to college and you're not sure where your life is going? You're away from your family. Who knows, right? I do also wonder about the resources available, either through the athletic program, in this case Rice University, or any university, or at the school, if there was a strong support group there with her, so many miles away from home. I don't know the details of that, but it can be very challenging to be out on your own, no doubt. Claire had a family here in southeastern Wisconsin. In fact, there will be funeral services for her this coming weekend. She's got a brother. Mom and dad are living here in the Menomonee Falls area. A terribly sad story. You know, I saw this the news on December 7th, and at that point, the details were kind of sketchy. But it just read like other stories that I have read about, you know, a sudden loss of life at university, kind of 19 to 22 years old. And it usually comes back as being a suicide. And then that was the case here. Terribly sad story. Your 19-year-old Claire Tracy of Menomonee Falls taking her own life at Rice University.
Claire Tracy gone too soon.
It is 12:21 on WTMJ. Greg and Jessica with you. It's Wisconsin's Midday News on WTMJ. But a lot of talk about porch pirates. And
it's that
how many
time of the year.
Thousands and thousands of packages are being stolen every day. And just looking at our subdivision in particular, thousands and thousands of packages are being delivered seemingly every day, right? And they pile up on the porch and somebody scoops by and snaps them up.
Well, and here's the thing. Porch pirates are a problem all year long.
Sure.
But it's this time where they're seizing on the opportunity.
Heightened sensitivity for that. But what if a porch pirate didn't steal a package, but instead, a pet?
Video from Diane Huff Medina's home security camera in Lakewood shows the driver dropping off a package at her door, then going into her front yard, grabbing her Siamese cat Piper by the neck, and returning to his car with it. Amazon told her the driver works for a third-party company.
They continue to say that this is being investigated and they're trying to get our cat back.
There was a similar case in Massachusetts in August. An Amazon driver grabbed a cat thinking it was a stray, but returned it after the owner complained. Michael Wallace, CBS News.
So it was an Amazon delivery driver that pulled up, dropped the package off, and took the cat.
Terrible.
Now, I must admit, there are plenty of Amazon delivery trucks that drive around our area, right? And they're very easy to pick out. They're kind of interesting looking. They're Amazon clearly marked delivery trucks. There are also packages that arrive from Amazon out of a guy driving a Chevy Malibu. And I always wonder, like, what is this? Like, how did this happen?
I haven't seen that, but I have seen unidentifiable vans.
Yes.
Where the news mind in me is, like, looking, okay, what's going on? Are they really here to deliver a package? Or are they, like, scoping out the neighborhood?
Well, and that's part of the difficulty. So one of those unmarked vans or unmarked vehicles pulls up, drops the package off, takes the cat. A lady calls Amazon. They're like, well, wait a minute. We didn't deliver that. We kind of did, but it was set up through this different service, which is sort of complicating matters in terms of recovering the Siamese cat, which are beautiful and mysterious all at the same time. Very interesting. Porch pirates, in a different way. The Amazon driver is taking the cat. 12:26 here on WTMJ. Just getting started here with Wisconsin's Midday News. Hey, lots of stuff to get to here, including a conversation with Matt Smith, WISN-TV political director. He is inside the courtroom here for the Hannah Dugan case. It's a federal trial. No cameras, no recording. Matt is on the inside. Right now, they're on a lunch break here, so we'll check in with Matt coming up following the 12:30 news. Plenty to get to on the Brown University manhunt, which continues, coming up at 1:15. Anna Schechter's covering that story for us with some new details that are emerging as that manhunt continues. And holiday break is coming up here for your son or daughter. What do? They are home. You got to work. You got time to take off? Some little getaways here around the state of Wisconsin. We'll explore that coming up at about 2:15.
The testimony today isn't just about what happened. It's about how it happened. Today, jurors in the federal trial of Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan are hearing from members of the arrest team. Judge Dugan is accused of helping a man who was in the country illegally evade immigration agents inside the courthouse. WISN-TV political director Matt Smith is on top of this trial. He joins us live from the courthouse. Thanks for taking time for us, Matt.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. So one of the things that I took note of so far, and I'm interested on your take, is that something that's come up numerous times already today and from numerous people is that It was not routine for the agents to talk to the chief judge. And upon learning of the arrest plan, Judge Dugan told the agents they needed to go see the chief judge. That ended up leading to confusion. What's your take on the focus of this?
So that's kind of one of the main points of contention that we're hearing in the back and forth today, because for the first time all morning on the stand, we've heard from these agents, the six agents who were actually on the sixth floor of the courtroom that day. And listen, there's some disagreement, right? This was one of the first arrests, first immigration arrests of the new Trump administration. So there was some confusion on all sides. The defense will say, listen, Judge Dugan didn't know what was going on, didn't know that these agents had a warrant, so she sent them to the chief judge's office, which is routine. the federal agents are saying, listen, we went through this process. We did our checks and balances to make sure we were going to be here. We were going to arrest him after the court hearing. And that's why we were all stationed at our positions in the hallway. So it's this back and forth about whose perspective, I guess, the jurors are going to believe at the end of the day.
So, Matt, we heard that audio yesterday about Dugan saying she'll take the heat or get the heat for what she did. Has the prosecution introduced any additional recordings or testimony that further speaks to her state of mind or maybe her intent?
No. So today is all about the agents who are in the hallway so far. And we've seen all of that video, right, that's been released publicly. But there's no audio on that video. So all we have is the word of the agents, their interpretation, and then the cross-examination from the defense. So we heard agents today describe Judge Dugan as tense, even angry at times when they ordered, they said, them down to the chief judge's office. But we'll never hear those conversations because there isn't audio on those cameras in the public hallways. So it's all based on interpretation and what these agents recall those conversations being. And obviously, if Judge Dugan is called to the stand, she will be able to give her interpretation of those conversations as well. We just don't know if that will happen yet.
It's so true that it's all up to perspective, because you could say somebody seemed very angry and they could be like, what? I wasn't angry at all. I mean,
right.
Totally up to interpretation. But speaking of Judge Dugan's demeanor, I'm curious about her demeanor today in court. What have you observed?
She's paying attention to the witnesses, listening intently, looking at the documents, sometimes putting on her glasses to look at the exhibits that are being presented. It's fascinating to watch not only Judge Dugan, but the jurors. Some jurors have been watching her, I've noticed, to see if they can garner, I guess, any reaction when agents say a certain something. The jury has been going back and forth between looking at the exhibits, listening to those who are on the stand. I mean, these are long days full of intricate details and testimony. So for your average Joe, who now is a juror in this high-profile case, it's a moment of needing to pay a lot of close attention to some of these intricate details.
I'm always curious about the scoreboard, and I know it requires a little interpretation on your behalf, Matt, but you've been in the courtroom here. Does it seem like there is a leader in the clubhouse here? Does the prosecution have an edge, or does the defense, in your opinion?
It seems a little mixed. I've seen some reactions, some jurors even nodding in agreement when the defense team has brought up certain points. It appears that others have done the same when the prosecution has pulled up some points. And the jury is a vast array of different ages, of course, some men, some women. And we don't know specifically where they're from in southeast Wisconsin. The Eastern District is rather a large area, so you can go, all the way up to Sheboygan, down to Kenosha, over into the western counties. So it has been fascinating to watch them. And just like we were talking about the conversations, all of this is up to interpretation as well.
Speaking of conversations, something else that came up was today was the Signal group chat. What did you learn about that group chat among the agents and the people around the arrest team?
So the defense has brought this up for the most part. The agents who were there that day were part of a group chat on Signal. And the defense team was the one to point out that the Pentagon had some issues. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth had some issues with Signal chats. And I think that was the purpose, to kind of potentially poke holes in whether it be the credibility of the agents or the credibility of the FBI or the agencies that were involved. But they were chatting back and forth just about the arrest. And a majority of it was leading up to when Eduardo Flores-Ruiz arrived. And I think we're going to hear more of that potentially this afternoon when more agents get on the stand, just in terms of what was in those chats. They showed a few of them, and the agents appeared to be joking back and forth a little bit. So we'll see what impact, if any, that has. Notable, though, the connection that the defense team is attempting to make to Signal and the Pentagon and the FBI and the overall Trump administration.
Yeah, so who was left to take the stand here this afternoon following lunch for, testimony and cross-examination?
Well, so I'm assuming they're going to finish up with the agents, because that's the path prosecutors have been going, the agents in the hallway to tell that story. And then there's a number of notables that still have to testify. Eduardo Flores Ruiz's attorney, the chief judge, Carl Ashley, is expected to testify, along with numerous other people who are in the courthouse, in the courtroom that day, some of the judge's staff. Whether that is this afternoon or tomorrow, we'll just have to wait and see how fast they move along in the afternoon session here.
And what was the atmosphere like today as you walked into the courthouse? Were there protesters out there this morning? Is there more media as more people arrive? I was kind of curious, too, because I think people were expecting more national media. But I also think that there's something to be said for the fact that cameras are not allowed in federal court. And I feel like that's why you have some national outlets observing in other ways and not actually there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a hard story to tell on TV, right? When you really have no video or audio. The national presence is still here. I think it'll ramp up on verdict day. No protests or anything this morning. The courtroom maybe half empty. It was full yesterday. So maybe subsiding a little bit as we get to midweek. I'm anticipating it will really ramp up, though, once closings begin and the jury starts deliberating.
And Matt, we've been reporting that this could go on until Thursday. Any reason to believe something different could extend to Friday or even next week?
Yeah, I mean, I think Thursday is wishful thinking at this point, but you never know. I believe there are about six witnesses in. Prosecutors had indicated at one point they were going to call as many as 28. On jury selection day, they thought they could be done by Wednesday afternoon. So I think we are looking at Thursday, Friday, and then depending on how long the jury would need to deliberate or jury instructions, how long closings go, it could seep it into next week. The judge has really worked, though, to try to make that not happen. So we'll see if it wraps this week.
And no
not.
Jurors, no other jurors out sick today, right? Everybody's staying healthy?
No, everyone is healthy and present as of now.
That is good, because they worked with an alternate yesterday, is that right? Because one was sick.
They lost an alternate, yes. Well, they lost one juror, so they're down to 13 now, so 12 jurors and one alternate. Both sides agreed and the judge to move on with the 13. That would be catastrophic to the process if they to start this in terms of jury selection. So they really want to keep everything on track and keep those jurors healthy.
Yeah, it is crucial that they stay healthy. Well, we are just minutes away from the jury coming back from lunch break, so we appreciate your time. We'll let you go. Yeah. That is Matt Smith, political director for WISN-TV.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Matt. Could you imagine that, right? Like the jury instructions. Go wash your hands. Don't be around anybody. Like, just stay. Wipe everything down. We cannot afford for you to get sick. There's a lot of people sick right now.
That's what I was saying yesterday. I mean, you kind of laugh about it, but this is serious.
Oh, my gosh.
They cannot afford. I mean, you've got to have your jury to hear this case, and we already lost one alternate.
Man, oh, man. 1247 here on WTMJ, Wisconsin's Midday News Podcast, built by Seidig Unlimited. Sign up, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and take us with you wherever you go. It's Wisconsin's Midday News Podcast, built by Seidig Unlimited. All right, so you fly quite a bit. I would say more than the average person, I believe you fly. And your husband flies more than, I'd say, 98% of the world.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That's true.
Okay, as a pilot, have you or has he ever been aboard a plane infested with rodents or a single rodent?
Gosh, this big rat. Can you imagine a big rat just zzz, all of a sudden you look down at your feet and there's something crawling. You're like, what is that? And woo, it's a big rat on the plane?
Well,
no, thank you.
Imagine that, but also imagine that happening without you being able to do anything about it or go anywhere. Ew.
The KLM flight was on its way from Amsterdam to Aruba when the large rat was spotted running atop a curtain rod in an overhead baggage compartment. Since the flight was already over the Atlantic, the pilot decided to fly on to Aruba, where the plane was taken out of service and cleaned. KLM says the rat never got close to the food.
Aww.
Rats on airliners are not just a hygiene risk. They could chew through the plane's wires and cause serious trouble. Michael Wallace, CBS News.
See, you hear the lady that sounded like she was going to pass out there? Oh, no.
It did look like she was... sounded like she was having some issues.
Rat discovered mid-flight. They got a giant Airbus, right? An Airbus 330. It's 30,000 feet over the ocean. Can't land it anywhere. You're going to this tiny little island in the Caribbean, Aruba, part of the ABC Islands. The crew says they kept an eye on the animal, and I think that means just locking the cockpit door to make sure it doesn't get up there and run around where the pilots are. Sure, I'm sure the pilots felt okay. That will just land this thing at our normal scheduled landing location. Well, they did search and service with extensive cleaning and inspections. The next leg of that flight was canceled, by the way. It was going to Bonaire, part of the ABC Islands. They had 250 passengers stranded because of a rat on the plane.
Okay, so would you rather have snakes on a plane or a big rat on the plane?
I don't like any of it.
I'll take the big rat, not going to lie. I will happily take a big rat on the plane over snakes on a plane.
Well, I kind of figure the rat is maybe as scared as the people are, right? You're kind of freaked out when you see a rat. I don't know if I can get into the mind of a snake. And neither is going to be a great situation if it bites you. But I feel like I might have the ability to get away or fend off a rat better than a large snake. Nevertheless, I hope I'm never in that in situation. The airline did state the animal did not interfere with food service and passengers remained calm.
I really appreciate the fact that they let us know that.
Well, that'd be
a problem.
Because
think about it. It was probably going for the cheese. They got a little bit of cheese. They got pretzels that are like the size of your fingernail. That's about as big as they are, right?
My biggest worry, honestly, would be that where did the rat come from? What else did it do? What did it nibble on? Rats will nibble on a wire, and all of a sudden everything on an airplane goes short. That's the problem. That's the biggest issue, and I'm sure that's why they had this thing grounded overnight. So people were put up at a hotel, got on a different flight the next day, and ended up back in Bonaire, which is a lovely island in the South Caribbean.
I think people with boats, if you keep the boat outside too, or there's some people who maybe they're, you know, if you have a barn or you're putting your boat in a barn, this sounds random. I know not everybody does that, but I've had experience.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Somebody who, you know, it's a little bit cheaper. Maybe you know somebody, so you put your boat in there, and then all of a sudden, I mean, they can wreak havoc on those wires. Not good.
Well, it's the reason why those boats or whatever are shrink wrapped. Oftentimes with storage, you pay a little more for it, but it's shrink wrapped just to make it airtight. You can't get in it, can't get out of it if you're in it. But in this case, this was a plane that had landed in Aruba with this rat aboard. It got aboard somehow. When did it happen? How did it take until the thing was at 30,000 feet to find out? We may never know the answer to that question. 12:54 here on WTMJ. Lots to get to here in the 1 o'clock hour, including a conversation with CBS Crime and Public Safety beat reporter Anna Schechter. Some new details emerging in the Brown University manhunt, although the person who is responsible for the deadly shooting over the weekend has not been detained. A massive reward is out for information leading to that person's arrest. Plus, holiday break is coming up, and that means you're trying to find stuff for you and the kids to do. They're home on break. Are you taking a few days off? Well, some interesting Wisconsin getaways you might want to explore. We'll do that with Ann Sayers, Wisconsin Tourism Secretary, coming up at about 2:15.